cream, curdly, crappy, slimy looking milk. And why? It didn't look like something a hog would eat, you know. Mm-hmm. But that dog, he just lapped it up. And I say 30 minutes later, he was trotting around with his tail up in there, but his old throat was still hanging down because the swelling was still there. Because he hadn't been able to absorb the fluids yet. But Daddy used to go up on the mountain. He had real white skin. And there was a, and he called it Dittany, which the book gives it as Mountain Dittany. And he would make a tea. And a couple of glasses of that tea. And what he had was like a prickly heat. Mm-hmm. Just like you'd see on babies.
Right.
And it's gone. And it grows all over the hills up there. But it likes high, dry, rocky. It grows especially well under chestnut oaks. You very seldom find it in, well, every place is desirable, almost. But talk about like 6 feet under, that's not. But it will be high and rocky places. Now, I've seen it over here at Dr. Johnson's place, and it's on bluffs over the creek. But it likes that. It's probably the pH and everything. And that Pipsissewa, and they call it some people rat vein, and that they mashed up in lard for burns. And some people call it wintergreen because it is green year round. And the frying the grease out of the toads and out of the for arthritis and the earthworms. And I think that is like Indian Jews. They say something's medicines. That is the characteristics that this plant or animal has. Mm-hmm. See, you know, like if a person would run fast, he might eat deer or wear a deer toe necklace. And he takes on the characteristic. It's like going through this reincarnation without dying. Mm-hmm. See, you take on the courage of a certain animal, you know, his fleet footedness. Other animals you don't eat because if you were having, you were going to go on something that required bravery, you wouldn't eat rabbit, you know, because a rabbit is, he's a placid little character with no courage. Okay. You can scare him to death.
Okay.
You know?
There is.
See, so that's that part. And I think a lot of that is like the toads, you know, their nimble joints, you know, and the way they jump, you know. So naturally he's got something in there that makes his joints work. So you make a poultice of it. And the worms, you know, how flexible little fishing worms are. And this old shaman, he says, healing begins when believing does. If you believe the little medicine man that lives inside of all of us, it's on the job. He starts to repair the damage. Because I know he cured his own cancer that was in his throat. And he picked 7 herbs and made a tea. And here again is an extension. See, when he would go out, see, he is his things, his plants. He is his alter, I guess you'd say alter ego is plants. And and the 7 plants that catches his eye, he picks, makes a tea. And he started to visualize him. That cancer has getting smaller and smaller. And in a month's time, he went back for x-rays and it was gone. And his wife, Potsuma, had some circulatory problem, and they told her he's going to have to take her legs off. And she said, well, you know, she said, I used to be a swimmer and a runner. And she said, I'll die all together. And she did the same. She started to visualizing her arteries opening up. And this was years ago. And her legs are still purple with little ulcers. They break out and they heal. But she still got them. She's still walking around, and I've seen her stand all the time during dances, mm-hmm. watching the other kids, and she's 61. But these people are well informed. They have a regular library of Edgar Cayce's. Mm-hmm. You know. Do you know who Edgar Cayce is?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. No, I didn't. Some people do, some don't.
Yeah.
I've got some of the books in there. But it works.
Well, do they draw on written material like that, or do they?
Well, they do. Some, it's both. You know, it's just like before Indians had a written language, it had to be passed on stories.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we have books, it's both. Because there's some things you cannot get from books. You've never read in a book about plants becoming an extension of you, or your crystals becoming an extension. Because you can't explain that in a book, I don't think. I don't think that you can really... I think that's what happened in Carlos Castaneda, that he never really got into anything that meant anything to me. He had, one of his books was A Separate Reality. But that was the big thing, is in the title, that we all have separate realities, but he didn't really explain those realities. Now, he said about, he would say, well, there's powers behind everything that you see. There is something behind it. Well, you know, I said, But then when we see the way that we can tie into these unseen energies, unseen is like, they say, well, you know, people take their dog to the veterinarian because he's lost his appetite and he's nervous. Well, right away, that tells the veterinarian that the man who brought him in is the same way. So I think that we draw in whatever we are. We draw in this kind of energy. Everything that comes in contact with us has to contend with that energy.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's negative or positive. Well, your dog, he's a captive audience.
Okay, there we go.
So he's going to get the same ails that the owner does. I see that more and more. And people. Can really almost destroy a family. Now, where they pick this up may have been in their family. Well, you know, they say, well, in certain types of insanity is hereditary. I think that's maybe the doctor's way of explaining it. See, what we can be doing is just passing on the same energies. Because a girl I used to date, I was telling Nancy about her, that she was one of them. She was absolutely beautiful. You'd never believe that I was out with a beautiful girl. But this went on for 10 years. But we would be together, just wherever. You could be riding along, you could be at the beach. And her eyes would all at once, for no apparent reason, just become glazed. And she would take on like a tiger, absolutely clawing, screaming, cursing, and all this kind of stuff. And then just This might go on for a few seconds or a minute and pass completely out. And she would wake up or come back to washed out and cry like there had been a battle going on inside of her. And whatever this energy was would overcome her. Now, the psychiatrist says it's a split personality. It is split during that time. You know, there's a battle going on here. But, you know, the Indian way of looking at things, that everything physical has a spiritual origin. And doctors don't deal with that spiritual part. They give you a pill. And you keep on having to take the pill. Now, if you go to a shaman, and he treats you for a particular thing, he will help you to get over that right then. It's up to you to keep the demons away. Mm-hmm. Because he can't do that. Okay. See, if you're going to draw in this same energy right back in again, he's wasted his time. Because I won't say that. But people do have a way of staying well for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And their heart didn't change. Their attitudes didn't change. The same old negative crap came back into them and gave them a pain in the back. Mm-hmm. See? You can't keep that away. Or if you were a medicine man, you can't keep that away. It's up to them. Mm-hmm. But you see, doctors will keep giving you muscle relaxants. See? You know, the Hindus, when they treat a person, they treat the entire person, you know. You don't just go in with a pain in your neck, you know. I saw in one of those documentaries, and they had this man in a trough. And it was probably olive oil and all kind of incense and stuff, you know. And they're massaging this man. They're working with the whole body, you know. And they're really purifying the man, you know. And you might have three people on this side and three on the other. And they got all this rhythmic motion going, you know. They're treating the whole person. And people, I think, still, from what I've seen, they can be possessed in a specific area or the entire body. Okay. You know, it's just according to degree. Same kind, just a degree. From a lump in your elbow that disappears, a lump in your stomach that disappears, a lump here that disappears. So, but it's the whole body that allowed this bad spirit to penetrate it. Because it's up to you to carry your goodies around. Mm-hmm. Now these goodies can be here, and it can be a combination. But it's up to you to keep yourself well.
When you worked other places, like electric and all this sort of thing, over your life you had felt this desire to get back
out. Oh, yeah.
You mentioned that.
Well,
was there a specific time when you began to deliberately search out the people and the information?
Yeah. My first little experience with a clairvoyant type thing was when I was 19. Mm-hmm. And this is just reference, you know. And then I must have been about 10, 12 years ago. See, we inherited this land up on the mountain, and there was a terrible cotton picking campaign waged against us, so we just moved out and left it, you know. And just let Mama die and do whatever she wanted to with it. But she did save us that 100 acres. But I was so disgusted, and so, and it was just brought back all the bad memories, that I was actually going to give it away.
Can I ask you what the situation was when that happened?
Oh, my, and I almost call her ex-sister. I hate to do that. But a sister would not do to anyone what was done to us. She left her, when Daddy died, right up in the field, she left her husband. That day, moved in with Mama and waged a campaign of character assassination against us. Without us knowing it, these things that were tales that were spread to neighbors about the way we were trying to steal everything and all this kind of stuff. And she wrote a letter to my sister in Florida and said, well, we've got Bruce's hands tied now. He can't get away. And my sister in Florida said, man, this doesn't sound right. Bruce is never trying to take things from anyone, you know? And she mailed it to me. And here I get this letter from my loving sister in Florida about the bitch back at the house. And I read this thing. And she said, Uncle Frank and Uncle Charlie has helped me, you know, tie my hands. And I took that letter and showed it to Mama. And her husband came down there while I was there, and he stayed around for a few minutes and left. I said, Mama, I said, this is the last day of peace you'll ever know. Because my ex-sister knew that what she had been doing had been discovered. And what does a fanatic do? They redouble their efforts. And that's what she did. So we just said, Mama, we're moving out. See, Daddy had already told us we were going to get this 100 acres, so we had started to build on it.
This was when you and Nancy...
We had been married about probably 6 years at the time. But we just moved out. Because there's no use trying to live in that environment.
Mm-hmm.
Because of how devastating it can be to you emotionally.
Sure.
And I just went down and told her, I said, we bought us a place and this was here. And that's why that things have a way of working themselves out if you will give them time.
Mm-hmm.
See? Now here was a bargain in the house 15 or 20 miles away from there. The rumors didn't make it this far. And we just let them live there together. And Mama's outside contact with the world was whatever my ex-sister told her it was. But she retained enough confidence in us to leave it to us. But I will never, now it's not, I told Mom, you know, when she saw this letter, she said, I don't know why Tootie did this. I said, I don't either. And that's all she said. And I said, Mom, I said, you have to take a stand for right or wrong. And I left it up to her. But I don't hold that against her. That's just a decision that she should have made that she didn't. She never stood up and said, Tootie, You didn't know better than this. She never knew that. And I have this omission and commission. If you don't take a stand for right, you're automatically wrong. You know, I think that you will have to confront that situation over. Not maybe this time around, but you will have to come to that point and keep coming to that until you make the right decision. See, because life to me, it goes on from that original bang. Every life, I think that this is like the whole, say the cosmos, is moving along a stream. You know, we have one captain. And we could have dissension among the crew. But we have to have these people that is bringing a calm, you know, back to them. And I think that if we don't take our place and do our part as peacemakers, then we're among the crew that is dissenting against the captain. That's about that.
Then back to this situation about when you consciously begin to make decisions to find.
Well, I picked up this Indian boy down. It was hitchhiking from out of Chapel Hill, and he was Lumbee. I asked him what his name was, and he gave me his Iroquois name that he had been given up, you know, at the reservation, where I think they call it the Five. It's now Six Nation Reservation in New York State, Iroquois. And he had given him this name, and he said his name was Blowhawken. And I said, that's kind of unusual, for he's Tuscarora. Then when he told me where he was from, I knew he was Lumbee. And I said, there's a place I'd like to show you. So maybe a couple of weeks later, I showed him the mountain. And we walked around over it. And we started doing sweat lodges up there. And that was the first time that they ever really got in touch with something that you could hear but couldn't see. And that was these whirlwinds that you knew was right beside of you, except nothing's moving, only there's a sound. And that was when I came home, and Nancy said, what went on up there? And I couldn't tell her, because of what it really meant to me, you know, is finally, there is, you're making contact with that separate reality, which is the one we don't see. Mm-hmm. We know it's there. And it just, I started going to powwows and kind of weeding out the sightseers from it and getting to in touch with real serious elders. Mm-hmm. You know, that sees through all of the carnival atmosphere, you know, and this kind of stuff. And they would really sit down. Now this one, Shakara, that you can ask him any question about Indian medicine or anything like that. And he will can refer right back. And the best record we have is a Bible. Mm-hmm. It was written by tribal people that were close to the earth. Jesus went on a vision quest. You know, they say he went up to the mountain for 40 days and nights, that kind of stuff. Well, Indians are still doing that. Here they're so many thousand miles from the Holy Land. Mm-hmm. See, to me it's all holy. And it's and they're doing the same thing. And people think, a vision, that's when you see something. No, that's when you go look for something. They go on these vision quests, and some of them stay 4 days. You can stay as long as you want to. But they're looking for something to give meaning to their life. You know, so something will happen, and you will know, this is the way I'm going to use my life. You know, I'll be known as Running Deer, or something other.
Mm-hmm.
Or White Eagle, Brave Eagle, Black Bear, so-and-so, you know. And I will take home the medicines of this animal. And because I do think it takes that isolation for us to get back in touch with our real nature. You know?
Is there a balance between isolation and fellowship that you mentioned?
It's hard. Yeah. Oh, at a powwow?
Yeah.
Well,
the other people.
There should be. I'm afraid it's not. It's hard to say you spend too much time alone, but you're never alone.
Mm-hmm.
You do think, and you're surrounded by unseen things. You know they're there. I think it's that there are lost spirits, and they look for a comfortable place. Now, it was this Halloween night. I was looking out the front window. I mean, I was standing there at the door,
mm-hmm.
and I was just looking at, and there was a car coming up from toward the bridge. That light in the boys' room came on. Halloween night, and I was the only one here. See? And I left it on for a while, and I kept it off. Well, Michael's best friend, a couple years ago, was killed in a farming accident, and one of his last pranks on us was to roll our lawn and found Halloween night. Well, now, how comfortable we are with this. Nancy was in there at that corner putting her makeup. And she see how she got all those lights on? Well, that fluorescent tube and overhead lights went off at the same time. She said, Bruce, did you just put it? I said, no, I didn't. Because that washing machine's still running. Now, those toggle switches, the lights are 12 feet apart. She went over and she flicked that one on where the fluorescent tube is. It came back on. She came over here and flicked the other one on. And it came on. So, but people can draw in good or bad. See, listen, I think that behind this, there's either they're letting you know they're here, or it's a trick. Just like they would do if he was still embodied.
Mm-hmm.
I'll turn the lights out of him. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't bother us. Because and you here you've got this biblical thing again about this 23rd Psalm. I should fear no evil. You know, you can be hurt, but as far as now that's not evil. You know, you can go out there and get hit by a car. That's gonna hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not evil. Eat mine up, Nancy.
You mentioned these parallels between what you believe now and the Bible, or if they are one and the same thing.
Oh, that started when I went to Elon. You know, it's a congregational Christian school. And old Doc Sloan, he is now, I don't know, he's got to be 9 years pushing it. But he said, you know, and he started to teach you this philosophy of religion. And you know, you start thinking about it. All of these things are beginning to sound alike. So you know that almost you get really, you now all of these years I've been told that Jews were heathens because they didn't believe in Jesus, and all of the Catholics are worshiping idols because, you know, they have these statues and stuff around town, and And that was the attitude at the time. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, what started me to question it is when I went into boot camp, you know, I was 20 years old then, and here's, well, the first muster we called, you know, they have everybody to fall out front. Mm-hmm. And to decide, well, you know, if we've got enough of these or that to justify a ceremony for them. And they said, okay, said, you know, said, and they have about 30, 40, 60 people out there. And they said, okay, said, all of you Protestants, hold up your hand. You know, I hold up my hand because I was still protesting at the time. And said, okay, all of you Jews, hold up your hand. I see these four or five people admitting to being Jews right in public, you know. You know, they're bold, you know. And they said, okay, all of you Catholics, hold up your hand. And here was a few more Catholics. You know, they're admitting to being Catholics, you know. So, gracious. You know, so. After we all got our